I'm Davis Donovan, and I cover news for WSHU Public Radio that sometimes takes me, well, off the path. Staying well-informed is essential to a well-functioning democracy. Understanding facts and filtering out noise takes work, and our mission at WSHU is to help you do that through coverage from our newsroom, NPR News, and the BBC. We're expanding our world together. Thank you for your support.
This is WSHU's After All Things, with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Weeks after 9/11, the city prepared for fallout of a different kind, according to newly released documents. Connecticut Republicans say ice activity in schools is a myth, plus how a proposed natural gas pipeline in Connecticut cuts across typical partisan politics. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. New York City officials were preparing for toxic exposure lawsuits just weeks after the September 11th terror attacks. That's according to newly released documents from a Freedom of Information request. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio reports.
The city identified as many as 35,000 potential claims from people who lived or worked near Ground Zero, ranging from toxic exposure to labor law violations. That's according to an October 2001 memo sent to the deputy mayor. Michael Barish is a lawyer who represents thousands of survivors and victims. He says the memo contradicts statements from public officials at the time who said the air was safe to breathe.
Shame on the city's legal department from hiding this from our citizens. Shame on them. And the blood of thousands of people, although I don't know how many, thousands of people who got cancer unnecessarily, who died unnecessarily, that's on them.
He says the city robbed residents and workers of the ability to make informed decisions.
A lot of people wouldn't have gone to Wall Street, wouldn't have gone back to their offices if they had known how toxic this dust was.
Survivors who register for the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund waive their right to sue for other damages. That's why Barish says it's not clear whether there's new legal ramifications in light of the memo. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
Some Connecticut Republicans are criticizing the head of the state teachers union for saying ICE is in the state's schools. WSHU's Shelley Hassman Kadish reports they want her to resign.
Connecticut Education Association President Katie Diaz said ICE agents are operating in and around schools, disrupting learning and shattering a sense of safety. She made the claim in reaction to the two ICE killings in Minneapolis last month. The GOP caucus called Diaz's statement, quote, 100% false and blatant fear-mongering. State Senator Eric Bertel and several other Senate Republicans said Diaz should step down or be fired if she won't. They say she knows ICE agents have to work through coordinators appointed by the district according to state law. Diaz defended her statement this week. She told Hearst Connecticut Media it's 100% factual and said some families are not sending their children to school out of fear. Shelley Hassman Kadish, WSHU News.
Connecticut advocacy groups want state lawmakers to prioritize health care reform this session. WSHU's Molly Ingram has more.
Their campaign is called Health Justice Now, and it's run by groups that advocate for expanded health care every year, like Husky for Immigrants and Health Equity Solutions. But this session, they say federal cuts to Medicaid and providers mean the state should be stepping up more than ever before. Tom Swan leads the Connecticut Citizens Action Group.
We've heard some of our leaders say that Connecticut cannot be asked to fill the gap left by the federal government. We not only reject this austerity frame, we are calling on our elected officials to commit to bolder action than we have seen previously.
As many as 170,000 Connecticut residents could lose Medicaid coverage in the coming years because of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The group wants to see policy to reduce medical debt, redefine affordability, and expand coverage options to all residents. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
While many political debates divide Republicans and Democrats, a natural gas pipeline in Connecticut defies those usual party lines. That story is coming up.
The voices you trust to keep you informed about what's happening in our region.
In Albany, I'm Samuel King for the New York Public News Network.
For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Amy Kolb-Noyes.
Desiree DiOrio.
Molly Ingram. WSHU News.
And the voices that bring you arts, culture, and moments of calm.
Hi, I'm music host Lauren Rico.
This is David Boucher.
I'm Joan Baum.
Trusted voices, here thanks to your support. WSHU, news you trust, music you love.
Gubernatorial candidate Bruce Blakeman's first choice for running mate has turned down the offer before the New York State Republican Convention. Blakeman had plans to offer the position to Sheriff Richard Giardino of Fulton County, New York. Far-right activist Laura Loomer had posted a screenshot of Giardino's run for president in the 2024 New Hampshire primary, claiming he was anti-Trump. A 13-year-old boy was arrested after he fired a handgun at the Trumbull Mall. Local police said they found two handguns at the boy's house and are working to find the original owners. Police say the teen was charged with attempted first-degree assault. 9 Long Island Power Authority officials made a base salary of at least $300,000 last year. This came after a year of legal and management changes meant that only 4 of them were around long enough to fully earn their pay. The highest paid official made $400,000 before being forced out of his position later in the year. General Dynamics Electric Boat says it plans to hire more than 8,000 employees this year. The Groton-based submarine maker sent employees a memo that said less than half of the hires would go to their second largest location in Rhode Island, with the rest staying in Connecticut. The company says they plan to renovate and open a new location in Waterford by 2027. There are plenty of issues that are Republican versus Democrat. A natural gas pipeline in Brookfield, Connecticut seems to buck the trend. WSHU's Ebong Udama spoke with the Connecticut Mirror's John Moritz, who's done in-depth reporting on this. Their conversation is part of the collaborative podcast, Long Story Short.
This story appears to be a classic example of NIMBY, not in my backyard. Is that what attracted you to it?
I think what attracted me to this story was when we talk about natural gas expansion and natural gas pipelines in the Northeast, it's often framed in a view of that it's environmentalists versus the Trump administration or more conservative politicians who are concerned about keeping down costs. And what I think this story showed is that the reality of the situation is more complex when you look at the communities that have to bear host of these projects. And you're right, you know, some of the sentiment can be described as, you know, NIMBYism or people concerned about the impacts of their community, but that doesn't fall along the typical left-right divide we often think about when talking about things like natural gas projects, or even as I've written about before, solar projects, which have gotten pushback in more blue communities where they've been trying to build.
Now, let's talk about the issue with natural gas and why we have such a problem supplying natural gas to Connecticut.
So natural gas is not produced anywhere locally in Connecticut or New England. It's produced out in places like Pennsylvania, Texas, even Canada, and it has to be shipped into the state along pipelines. There's 3 major interstate pipelines serving Connecticut, the Tennessee, the Iroquois, and the Algonquin systems. And in order to get more, all those 3 pipelines currently are operating at or near their capacity, particularly in winter when the demand for natural gas is higher. So in order to build or to in order to get any more gas into the state, we either have to build more pipelines or expand the capacity the existing pipelines, which is what this project, the Iroquois project in Brookfield, is attempting to do.
Now, could you tell us a little bit, give us a little bit of background, what this project in Brookfield is all about? You've touched on it a little bit.
So in the town of Brookfield, which is just over the New York border, there is currently a compressor station that consists of 2 gas-fired compressors. So essentially what this station is doing is it takes a little bit of gas out of the pipeline, burns it to, you know, spin a turbine and produce power, and then it uses that power to push more gas through the pipeline. So it's essentially compressing the gas and increasing the capacity of the pipeline. What Iroquois, which is the pipeline owner, wants to do is it essentially wants to double the size of that facility, building two new compressors in Brookfield. That would allow it to push an addition of 125 million cubic feet of gas through the pipeline each day. That's about an 8% expansion of the pipeline's overall capacity.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the politics of Brookfield. This is a town that voted for the president in the last election.
Yes, it voted for President Trump in 2024. It's voted for the Republican in four of the last five elections. The town did vote for former President Biden in 2020, and it has a Democratic majority on the Board of Selectmen. So it's not a dark red town by any means, but for Connecticut, it's certainly, you know, a more conservative community.
It's also the town where the Republican leader in the Senate is from, Stephen Harding.
Yes. So Steve Harding is the top Republican in the Connecticut State Senate. And his point, which is the point made by a lot of residents in this town, is the project is being built by Iroquois, and they've stated this publicly. Their intention is to sell the additional gas that would flow through the pipeline to customers in New York. So the pipeline, if you want to think of a map, the pipeline kind of crosses diagonally across the southwestern part of Connecticut. Then it goes underneath Long Island Sound, and then pops up again in Long Island, and it runs west in Long Island and then terminates in the Bronx, New York. So their purpose in this expansion is to sell more gas to residents in Long Island and New York City, which opponents such as Steve Harding have pointed out that Connecticut, they don't see that Connecticut or their community is getting the benefit from the project, even though they're the ones having to host it. What kind of makes that situation a little bit more complicated is the pipeline currently does serve about 30% of the gas that currently flows through the pipeline ends up going to either residential or commercial customers in Connecticut or to fuel a handful of power plants in the state that are producing electricity. An economist I spoke to said, you know, even if the additional gas is being sold or is being intended to be sold to Long Island, one, it doesn't prevent Connecticut from purchasing that gas at some point in the future. And in fact, the company says that gas will be available to Connecticut on the majority of days, probably not in the winter when the pipeline is at the, you know, its most constrained point. But on the majority of the days during the year, the company says this extra gas will be able to be available to Connecticut customers. And the other thing the economist mentioned is that, you know, just by the factor of increasing the capacity, it will lower the cost of the gas compared to the national average, essentially, which, you know, would both be a benefit to gas customers in the state as well as to electric customers who are paying to have that gas be used to fuel power plants.
But the residents of the area are concerned about safety.
Exactly. So their concern is that, one, this pipeline is located about a third to about a half a mile away from a nearby middle school, where a lot of the people in Brookfield send their children to school. In addition, because the compressor station, as I mentioned, burns gas to fuel its compression, that burning releases local air particulate matter emissions into the air that would be released into the surrounding community. So that's one of the other points that they've raised concerns over.
Well, thank you so much, John.
Thank you for having me.
John Moritz is the Connecticut Mirror's environment and energy reporter. I'm Ebon Udama.
For the news you trust and music you love, listen on the radio, online at WSHU.org, or download the free WSHU app. And don't forget to give us a follow on Instagram. We'd love to connect with you on there. You can find us at WSHU Public Radio. I'm Sabrina Garon. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk tomorrow.